Our next case is coming up is the State of Minnesota versus AMS. It's file number 823-0181. So as you're getting situated, as I'm sure you're aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. Respondent will have 15 minutes, and then finally the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. This is being live streamed, so whenever you're ready, counsel for the appellant, if you could just approach the microphone, adjust it to your level, and tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Tom Hagler. I represent the appellant AMS. And the first issue is that the district court erroneously applied the expungement statute, Minnesota Statute 609A, even though the appellant's petition specifically asked for the court's inherent authority. And this court of appeals decided a case similar to this just in 2022, State v. DVL, non-presidential opinion, but they concluded that a district court abuses its discretion by concluding that the expungement statute prohibits inherent authority expungements in addition to statutory expungements. And that's what happened here is...
Apparently Dakota County needs to include another box to be checked.
Yes, that's right. That goes into the second issue, really, is with the findings of fact that the court made. And the court
didn't make any. Isn't that a fair statement? On inherent authority.
Right. She analyzed it under the statute. But, the findings of facts were checking boxes and filling in the blanks. And there was a case in 2013 in front of the Court of Appeals, State v. ASE, that said... If you reach a conclusion without analyzing required factors or making any findings of fact relevant to those factors, the case is at a minimum.
If we were to agree with you that a remand was required, do you have authority supporting your argument that a district court has inherent authority to expunge records held by the executive branch?
Well, I'm relying on the State v. HA case where I was hoping that this court could provide a little guidance to the lower court on that issue because...
Preferably in a published opinion, no doubt.
Of course.
Contravenes Supreme Court case law.
Well, Your Honor, I read that case law a little differently.
Okay. Tell us why... We should read it your way, Mr. Hagler.
In this case, there are constitutional violations. The first one would be the unfulfilled promise made under the plea agreement that constitutes a constitutional infringement as a basis for expungement. That's State v. HA decided by the Court of Appeals in 2006. There is another Minnesota Supreme Court case saying when a defendant is not fairly apprised of the consequences of her plea, her due process rights are violated. That's State v. Wukowicz. And another Minnesota Supreme Court case saying allowing the government to breach a promise that induced a guilty plea violates due process. And what happened in this case was the plea agreement clearly had written on it, stay of imp. They had negotiated that plea agreement just before the sentencing hearing. When they go into sentencing, the prosecutor told the judge it was a straight plea, whatever that means. And the judge apparently didn't read the plea petition. The defense counsel didn't go over the terms of the agreement, which goes to another constitutional violation. I believe she was provided with ineffective assistance of counsel because her lawyer didn't speak up when the judge said state of execution.
We know what's in the plea petition, and we know what's on the orders, but what we don't have is a transcript of the sentencing. And, I mean, normally, you know, I think the case law says it's what, you know, it's what the judge says, you know, at the sentencing hearing versus, you know, what the form says. And we don't know that. I mean, you may be right. I'm not saying you're wrong, but you know, we don't have the transcript, so a lot of these arguments, you know, I'm not so sure we could, based on this record, do what you want us to do on the constitutional arguments as to why inherent authority should apply based on the fact that, you know, she didn't get what she was promised in the plea petition.
Well, oddly enough, when I was drafting the petition for expungement, I had called records, Dakota County records, I'd called the court administration. I was told that that court reporter had retired, and they weren't sure what the data retention practices were. They assumed that it's not in the record. It was never ordered. Maybe it was never created. Well, after filing this appeal, I thought I would try once again, and they did put me in touch with the court reporter. He did, in fact, have a copy of that transcript, and he mailed it to me a few weeks ago. So, unfortunately, it's not part of the official record.
Good for you. All right, but, you know, we're stuck with what we're stuck with.
I understand.
So, if we agreed with you, on remand, what should our remand instructions say? I mean, should it be just limited to the court should consider its inherent authority, or to determine whether it has an inherent authority to, you know, expunge based on this record? Do you want to add anything else to that?
I think on the pleadings and the what we've shown is that the benefit to AMS does outweigh the disadvantage to the public. I think she's met the burden.
No, but I mean, do you want us to say, and in addition, consider the transcript, which now apparently exists somewhere, if it does, and consider that and these additional arguments that you're making?
Yeah, that would be helpful guidance to the lower court, because I think beyond the just obvious mistake she made.
Anything else you want us to tell the district court?
That it would be...
I mean, outside of, you know, issue the order expunging the records, but
well,
since we can't do that, mm-hmm. I'm trying to just, you know, we so often are being told by our brethren below that, you know, our remand instructions are incoherent, incomplete, all of the above. So now we're trying to, whether that's true or not, and I'm not so sure it is, but we are trying to be as complete as possible. So you would want us to specifically order the district court to consider whether it has its inherent authority and consider the arguments you're making, relying on whatever transcript may exist to bolster your arguments about, you know, my words, not yours, you know, the bait and switch. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, Your Honor, but also the written plea agreement that says, it clearly says stay of imp on there, and then just also that the fact is that the state is trying to deprive her of the benefit still in their pleadings. They said...
But, you know, doesn't that go, it seems to me those arguments go not to whether or not the crime should be expunged, but whether or not she received effective assistance of counsel when she pled. Why am I wrong?
Well, I think it's both, because neither of the lawyers spoke up, and the defense counsel didn't ask for clarification. She didn't explain to her client. She didn't advise her, you know, here are your options. You didn't get the sentence that you bargained for. Here are your options. You can withdraw your plea. You can do this or that. None of that happened. She didn't say anything in the hearing. And then, you know, the prosecutor in the hearing also didn't mention the stay of imp when it's clearly written in pen. So I think there was both a deprivation of the bargain and ineffective assistance.
There was a PSI. That PSI referenced the plea and the plea agreement?
The PSI, I believe, was done before the plea agreement. It was a pre-plea PSI.
So if there had been a PSI after, it would have spelled out what the plea agreement is normally, would it not?
It would, normally.
In case that didn't happen because the PSI was conducted earlier.
It was a pre-plea, yes. But I think, you know, the other facts show that she has remarkable rehabilitation. She's gone back to college. She's been law-abiding, you know, counseling, you know, no other violations. This is her only criminal record ever, a single mistake as a young person. And she also has shown that she was denied employment and educational opportunities based on this record. So does the court have any other questions? I could reserve my time.
I don't think we do. Thank you. You will have 5 minutes of rebuttal, Mr. Hagler. We'll now hear for counsel for the respondent, please.
May it please the court, my name is Jackie Warner, and I represent the respondent, State of Minnesota, in this matter. And I will start by what I believe to be the elephant in the room, which is that the state is conceding that a remand is appropriate in this case.
Consider expungement from judicial records.
Correct, Judge. Yes, and I will get to that and my reasoning for that. But given my further review of the record, specifically the district court's order, I do not believe that it contains the requisite findings that are necessary for this court to conduct the review that it needs to in order to determine whether or not inherent authority should have been used to expunge judicial records.
If we are remanding for consideration of whether judicial record expungement is appropriate, is there some danger in asking the court to do more than that, such as look at a transcript that apparently now has surfaced and considering some other factors that the court didn't consider in the first instance?
Judge, I think that's best left to the discretion of the district court. I don't think that this court should necessarily provide the guidance as far as whether or not the transcript from the plea hearing is or is not appropriate. I think the argument from both sides is that it should be something the court considers. If you read the transcript in this case, you can see that Judge Edwards inquired of the transcript from that sentencing, was looking for that clarification, and it was not provided to her because it, as counsel indicated, did not exist until very recently. So
who has the obligation of making sure that the trial court has a transcript when it wants it?
The appellant, Judge. The person...
At the time of sentencing?
At the time of sentencing, there would have... So we're referring to the sentencing transcript is the transcript that's missing in this case.
Which transcript were you referencing here?
Expungement transcript.
Judge wanted. In this case?
Yes. So at the expungement hearing, it's my understanding that Judge Edwards asked if there was a transcript from the plea and sentencing hearing because she wanted to sort out at that time whether or not there was any sort of violation of the party's agreement. But no such transcript existed. As far as any other additional, I know there was...
And that, you say, was the appellant's obligation because he was bringing the motion.
Petitioner at that time, but yes, appellant now.
Is there any obligation on anybody else to make sure that the court's file and record reflect the transcript after sentencing?
Not that I'm aware of, Judge. But I do ask that this court...
Well, I'd be willing to bet Judge Klapacki's sentencing file's always had a copy of the transcript. I know mine did. Well, let's say we do want the district court to consider what was said and versus what was written down. Is that relevant to expungement, or is that more relevant to a motion for plea withdrawal, Ms. Warner?
Absolutely the latter, Judge. And that's the crux of the state's argument, is that for the most part...
How long has that been? Is that, when did she plead? I can't remember. Is it a long time? It's more than 2 years.
2012, right? I believe, was when.
Okay, so there you go.
So yes. There's no remedy for that now.
Yeah.
I would disagree, Judge. There have been cases decided by this court that suggest that post-conviction relief can occur after expiration or discharge of a criminal sentence. So it really depends on when this error, to be clear, the state doesn't believe there was an error, right? So whether or not there was an agreement, we will...
believe it, but you haven't seen the transcript?
Based upon the sentencing order, we understand that the district court always has that discretion to disagree with the party's plea agreement. So there's been no evidence presented that the state reneged.
If the court does, then if the court's going to not do what was agreed to, I think the defendant has the right to withdraw his plea.
Absolutely, and that is something that would be...
in this case... you know, if she knew it was a stay of X, she wouldn't have taken the deal because she thought it was, well, whatever. Why wouldn't this go, well, let's say, well, I don't know what is in the transcript either, so, but let's say it confirms Mr. Hagler's version of the events. Why wouldn't somehow that be relevant to an expungement issue, you know, dealing with the court's inherent authority, you know, in the interests of justice, the necessity to balance the detriment to the appellant versus, you know, the need to maintain public safety. I mean, it seemed to me this is sort of exactly one of those things where it kind of does sort of smack of wanting to exercise your inherent authority.
And I don't disagree to some extent, Judge, but I think the problem is we don't want to, nor should we return expungement courts into post-conviction courts, right? I think that's the distinction here. I think if we had a post-conviction court where there were factual findings that a plea agreement had been violated, so we do have a due process implications, yes, I do think that...
Well, not only a plea agreement violated, but a true transcript would show that, if counsel's correct, that it was a stay of imp agreement, and that counsel was totally silent. Now that goes to bothers me in terms of competency of counsel.
Certainly, so, and Judge, I appreciate that, and I
what other findings you would need and what other testimony you would need if you, that transcript itself would, seems to me, would ought to make it very clear what the agreement was and what counsel said in response to it, and in this case, represented as being nothing.
Judge, I think that doesn't take into consideration the fact that we do see post-convictions quite frequently where ineffective assistance of counsel is alleged. And in that situation, the trial counsel would have a conversation with their client, waive attorney-client privilege. They would provide testimony as to what was or was not communicated to their
that
client.
It seems to me like there'd be any strategic reason to keep your mouth shut as an attorney if the plea agreement is violated.
And unfortunately, that may be the case, but I do know that this is not the first time that a defendant has claimed surprise after a sentence has been executed or discharged that they didn't realize what was going on. I mean, this court has had a number of occasions to decide very similar issues, and I think the problem is the expungement piece of this is kind of morphing into a post-conviction piece. And so I agree that these things need to be ironed out. You don't have the facts necessary before you to make those determinations. But I would ask the court to provide, again, some guidance or authority on that remand because the court does have the ability to review the district court's exercise of its inherent authority affecting executive branch records, and they review that as a question of law. So we're not in abuse of discretion territory anymore. So I do ask that the court does, assuming that the plea agreement, that there is no evidence that the plea agreement was violated, that the district court would lack the necessary authority, whether that be under its unique judicial function or because of a constitutional infringement, to reach into the executive branch records and expunge those.
Do you think it would be inappropriate if we remanded on the question of expungement of judicial records to suggest to the trial court that it look at that transcript, if there is such a transcript, and that it, while being irregular in terms of procedure, consider the matter as a post-conviction matter?
I think the court certainly could do that. It would provide a unique posture, but potentially solve the issues. I think the problem you run into is that post-conviction has a statutory framework under 590 that we would then need to kind of deal with, and you'd look at the timeliness and when did appellant become aware of this.
I just suggested consider it. I didn't want to telegraph what to do about it.
Right, yes. And so I certainly think you could provide that guidance, but again, we would still need to get to the ultimate expungement question of, you know, what can the district court do or not do as far as the executive branch records are concerned. Let's assume there was a violation, I think the appropriate thing is to treat it as a stay of imposition. It is not to jump to the conclusion that the record should be expunged. Right, so I think that that's the distinction too. The post-conviction court would have the ability to correct the sentence if it was improper, or permit a plea withdrawal if that was what appellant chose to do. But I think that both the ineffective assistance of counsel and the plea agreement issue are not properly before an expungement court. Whether or not they could kind of morph the two into a similar hearing, it remains to be seen. I don't think it's been done, but I'm not saying that it couldn't. The other piece that I wanted...
As a stay of imp, then, would it have been reduced to a gross misdemeanor or a misdemeanor?
A misdemeanor at the completion of the probation, Judge.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Warner.
The final claim...
Which clearly would be, you know, there's a big difference between expunging a felony and expunging a misdemeanor.
No, Judge. So there is actually case law, SAM, that suggests that a stay of imposition is treated as a felony conviction for purposes of expungement. So it wouldn't necessarily change the court's analysis.
Thank you, Ms. Warner.
The third claimed constitutional infringement is this education.
It may not change the court's analysis, but it sure make a difference to a defendant.
Certainly. And again, the... collateral piece of this with that employment and education, I don't disagree. But again, we're making some presumptions, and we just don't have the facts yet to determine what did or didn't occur. And then lastly is this education piece that is mentioned throughout appellant's brief. And I just would note that, you know, it's the state's position that there has not been a recognized fundamental right to post-secondary education. That isn't supported by our Constitution, statute, or that presiding case on this matter, Skeens, and just practically how absurd it would be if this court were to make such a finding. It would essentially open up the floodgates, so anybody that was denied application to a public university could sue for violation of those fundamental rights. So I think that that's one thing that the state wanted to be sure to dispose of if we could at the Court of Appeals, as that would be properly before this court and doesn't necessarily require any sort of additional findings. Also, appellant in this case lacks the standing in the sense that she does have a college education. She graduated from Metropolitan University. Her desire to obtain a preferred degree is not what I believe this court was envisioning when it allowed for expungement of executive branch records. And then the last thing that this court, the state wanted to do with its remaining time was just to point out how the courts have consistently recognized that restraint needs to be exercised in giving the district court any guidance when it comes to expungement of the executive branch records. Clearly, there is a separation of powers concern that's going to overarch all of this, and the legislator has expressed both in 609A by not permitting appellant to expunge this type of conviction, the Data Practices Act, which would make this conviction still public for quite a few years, as she was just discharged about 5 years ago from what the state believes is a very serious sentence. And then also the background study. I know there was some time spent in appellant's brief essentially attacking the licensing scheme by the Department of Human Services. One, not properly before this court on this issue, but also just really emphasizing the point that the legislator does believe that background checks are important that somebody who has committed a crime like appellant has committed should be scrutinized more seriously than just somebody who is does not have that criminal record. So in conclusion, I would ask that this court affirm the district court's denial of executive branch record expungement because appellant has not established any sort of constitutional infringement or that a unique judicial function is implicated. I understand and agree that the concern is that this court lacks the facts necessary to reach the inherent authority of the judicial branch records, and knowing now that that transcript exists, it does bring some concern about whether or not the district court could possibly be in a better position to make findings. But I do think that this court should not relieve appellant of its burden of needing to establish that post-conviction is appropriate. And unless the court has more questions.
Thank you, Ms. Warner.
Thank you.
Mr. Hagler, you'll have the last word, sir.
Thank you. Just again to reiterate, I was told by court records and court administration that this transcript wasn't prepared, wasn't ever prepared, that so in effect that it didn't exist on the record. But post-conviction relief for these unconstitutional conviction maybe is a possibility, but then you've got the time limit, the two-year time limit, the you know, these are lengthy, costly endeavors. And I think the bar is much higher. I've, in arguing post-conviction cases, I've often you don't get a hearing even. I mean, that's they just dispose of it that way. As for correction of sentence, there's a Minnesota Rule of Criminal Procedure 2703, but there's a case decided in 2015 that says, State v. Coles, it says, the exclusive remedy to challenge a sentence imposed as part of a negotiated plea agreement was a post-conviction relief petition. And then there's the Court of Appeals case, Martinek v. State, that said, once your sentence expires, the court no longer has jurisdiction to modify it, even if it's an unconstitutional or unauthorized sentence. The easier remedy here, the one that makes sense, is to seal the record so she can get the benefit of the misdemeanor that she should have had under the deal that she made with Dakota County. She has shown her burden of rehabilitation. This record doesn't really reflect who she is or, you know, her true character. One mistake, 11 years ago, doesn't define a person, and I think she's shown that through her rehabilitative efforts, and we're asking the court to give guidance to the lower court on whether she's met that burden.
Thank you, Mr. Hagler.
Thank you.
We will issue our opinion within 90 days.